we did a lot of analysis on our students' success and realized that the number one factor in whether a student was successful in college or not was their EFC, their estimated family contribution based on FAFSA. And students that were falling below a certain threshold in their EFC were not performing at the same rate as all their other peers.
So that there's a strong link there between how much money a family makes and how successful they're not how smart they are, right. Not how hard they work, but how right. much money your parents or your family exactly make right. is the strongest indicator of how successful you're going to be in college or post-secondary training program.
That's right.
Welcome to the Unleash Generosity podcast, exploring the intersection of faith, service, philanthropy, and community. This is your host, Aaron Scott. I'm glad you've tuned in for episode 11. If you haven't listened to past episodes of the podcast, or you would like to re-listen to a past episode, you can always do so on the Unleash Generosity website, which is www.unleashgenerosity.org, or you can check us out on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts. You can also find the podcast on social media, on Facebook, on Instagram, and on Twitter. You know, looking back at the most recent episodes, number 9 and number 10, the two-part conversation with Christian writer, speaker, and thinker Jonathan Wilson Hartgrove, we discussed the role that faith and religion plays in American politics. Since those episodes aired, we had Election Day on November 3rd, 2020, and now we're nearly 2 full weeks later. The Trump campaign continues to litigate, fighting the results in court to try to get some mail-in ballots disqualified and to also get recounts underway in multiple states, including Pennsylvania, Michigan, and others. The point of this podcast is not to unpack the merits of those lawsuits or to predict who is going to take control of the White House in January of 2021. The courts are going to make that determination. While the election is contested, and there's a great deal of division between Democrats and Republicans, today's episode does not talk about divisiveness. It actually talks about a way that Republicans and Democrats have worked together to address an important issue. And that issue is the issue of affordability and accessibility in post-secondary education. It's a tremendous challenge facing rural and urban communities alike, facing students and their families across the country. I'm really pleased to welcome today's guest, Ben Sterling, who serves as the Senior Director of Content with TN Achieves, that's Tennessee Achieves. During our conversation, you're going to hear about the 100,000 students that have been enrolled in college and then more than $97 million in scholarships awarded through this organization's work. You're going to want to stay tuned to hear more about this Tennessee program that's serving as a national model for promoting economic and community development by investing in affordable workforce development and educational learning opportunities. Here is my conversation with Ben. Hey, Ben, how are you?
Aaron, I'm well. How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking some time.
Oh, I'm happy to. Love to.
Tell us your name and what you do.
Sure. My name is Ben Sterling. I serve as the Senior Director of Content for Tennessee Achieves. I've held a couple of different titles, but right now that's it. I do mostly outreach work. I've worked a lot with our mentoring program, community development, but sort of transitioned due to COVID to a lot of content creation, video creation, print and social media. Lots of those things going on right now. So that's my role. I graduated from Carnes High School. In okay. Knoxville.
So tell us a little bit about growing up in East Tennessee.
My favorite thing to talk about, probably. Proud to be from Tennessee, but particularly proud of this organization. I was a first-generation college student, graduated from Carnes in 2009. Ironically, Tennessee Achieves launched in 2009, and I was able to use the scholarship in the year that it launched. So I was a student in the first class or cohort of students of Tennessee Achieves. At that time, it was called Knox Achieves. I've seen the program from its first year and now today serving 60-something thousand students annually. So I've seen the program all 10 years of its existence and every step of the way in terms of growth. My experience in East Tennessee was really good, but I'm thankful that there's organizations like Tennessee Achieves that are there to prop up students who are the first in their families to go to college, because for me, it would have been a challenge to get to college because my parents just weren't familiar with the process. I often tell this little story about my parents, because if you'd ask my mom in 2009 what the nearest college to her house was, her answer would have been the University of Tennessee. The University of Tennessee is 30 minutes from my parents' driveway. 7 minutes in the other direction is Pellissippi State Community College, a 10,000-student institution that she didn't know existed.
Yeah.
So if it had just been parent guidance alone, I didn't have the academic or emotional maturity to be a University of Tennessee student in 2009. Right. And so I probably wouldn't have gone to college.
So did you go to Pellissippi then?
Yeah, so with Tennessee Achieves, I did 2 years of community college at Pellissippi State. Did pretty well. Actually lost my Hope Scholarship my first semester.
In case people aren't familiar with that, so describe what the Hope Scholarship is and how that's one, you know, source of tuition assistance. And then tell us more about Tennessee Achieves.
A broad picture in terms of Tennessee higher ed, the scholarship that most people have heard about is the Hope Scholarship. And that's because it's been around for almost 20 years. It's a merit-based scholarship based on high school GPA or ACT score. And it provides tuition assistance for students at all Tennessee community and four-year colleges.
And is that funded by lottery dollars?
It's a lottery-funded scholarship, yeah. And it's, but it's not a tuition-free scholarship. And most students that use the Hope Scholarships still have some sort of out-of-pocket cost if they don't have an additional funding. Right. The Tennessee Promise is a last-dollar scholarship that allows students to attend community or technical colleges tuition-free. And when we talk last dollar, that means it's a scholarship that pays once all state and federal funding has been applied. The Hope Scholarship is one of those state and federal funding sources. So take that first, apply it to a student's account, and then after we do that, if there's a balance remaining, Tennessee Promise picks up the difference.
Then that would reduce the amount that they would have to take out in loans or pay out of pocket.
Ideally, a student going to a community college would never take out a loan because the Tennessee Promise renders their balance zero, other than books and some class-specific fees. But we've found in some communities ways to also cover some of those costs. So Tennessee Promise makes it, we ideally can navigate a student through the process without ever having to take out a student loan. It does occur sometimes at some of the four-year institutions. There's a few four-year colleges throughout the state that offer associate's degree programs, which makes them eligible for Tennessee Promise.
Right.
In some cases, students that attend there will need to take out a loan to be able to cover their balance. But it's a small percentage of the students overall that use the scholarship.
Was Tennessee Promise sort of built on the Tennessee Achieves model?
Yeah. So that's often a thing of mystery for a lot of folks in the industry. So Tennessee Achieves, like I said earlier, launched back in 2009 as Knox Achieves. At the time, it was launched as a workforce development initiative in Knox County. Really, it was out of the mayor's office, which a lot of scholarships don't reside there.
Sure.
Out of the Knox County mayor's office. It was a partnership between the Knox County mayor and our continued chairman, Randy Boyd. We've got to get more Knox County residents with some sort of post-secondary credential. And they started by identifying students who weren't going to college. And when they identified those students, they realized most of them would, if they would go, would be the first in their families to go to college. And most of them being from low-income backgrounds. And when you are targeting that particular student, it's not always a financial issue that's keeping them from going to college. And that's where Tennessee Achieves was born, was under the idea that it's not just a scholarship, it's a program. It's a step-by-step pathway for a student. So we launched the program in 2009 as a last dollar scholarship that I benefited from, attend college tuition-free because of it. Also, it came along with a volunteer mentor that coaches the student through the process. It came along with a community service requirement to help build a sense of community. And hopefully when students enter the workforce, they understand the value of a volunteer hour. It included targeted communication to make sure that if you haven't filed FAFSA or you haven't registered, there's a communication coming for you to remind you to do that. And for students who were like me, the first in their families to go, you don't even know what step one is.
You don't know the questions to ask. You don't know what you don't know, right?
That's funny you say that. That's one of our executive director, Chrissy. She quotes her dad a lot. And that's one of her favorite quotes is, you don't know what you don't know, and you can't take it for granted. So for a lot of our students, they don't even know where to begin. So Tennessee Achieves, when it launched in 2009 and today, more than 10 years later, it's still rooted in that same idea that we're here to bring college to everyone, to your front door, so that when you step out, you know exactly what to do every step of the way. And there's plenty of reminders to make sure that you stay on track. So Tennessee Achieves, when it launched back in 08, was, again, was just serving Knox County. Our board was comprised of some of the same people that are still on our board today. But one of our new most recent board members that just came back left our board in 2011. He became the governor of Tennessee. It was Bill Haslam. So when he became the governor, he took our idea to Nashville and began saying, we want to see this grow. Let's take this outside of Knox County. This is too good to keep to yourselves. So we went on a statewide fundraising campaign and took the program from one to 21 counties in its first expansion in 2011. And then up until 2014, we were privately fundraising everything from operating budget to scholarships in 27 counties. At that time in 2014, we were serving Shelby County in Memphis, which is the largest school district in the state, Davidson County, Metro Nashville, the second largest, and Knox County, the third largest. So we were serving the three largest school systems in the state, as well as 24 other counties across the state that were more rural. But I think at that point, we'd sort of reached our limit. The further we kind of we got away from Knoxville, the harder it was to fundraise, given that Randy Boyd was really helping us find most of our fundraising dollars at the time. And took that to Governor Haslam and said, I think we've reached our limit. He's like, well, we're just going to take you out of this fundraising ballgame altogether in terms of scholarships, and started the process of organizing the Tennessee Promise Scholarship. And we were hands-on in creating the legislation for the scholarship all the way down to the community service requirement that's written into legislation, the team meeting requirement that's written into the legislation. All of that was based on the policies and the procedures of Tennessee Achieves that were being operated in 27 counties.
So that 27 county program, Tennessee Achieves at the time, it was a nonprofit, and you were accepting philanthropic gifts to provide this basically pipeline of helping people access higher education or post-secondary training.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it kind of morphed from a nonprofit into a state government program. Is that correct?
That's interesting too. So in 2015, when Tennessee Promise launched, our role sort of changed. We began what we're called now as a partnering organization to the Tennessee Promise. So we are still a nonprofit. I'm employed by a nonprofit. My salary is privately fundraised.
Okay.
But we administer a state scholarship. Essentially. So the Tennessee Promise is funded through the lottery, through an endowment created through the Tennessee Lottery. But the Tennessee Achieves budget is privately fundraised to this day.
So kind of a public-private partnership model.
Yeah, it is.
And obviously Governor Haslam, he was Mayor Haslam of Knoxville at the time. After he was mayor, he then became governor of Tennessee and served for, was it 8 years?
Yep, two terms.
And Randy Boyd, for those that don't know, was a Tennessee businessman based in Knoxville. And Randy Boyd served as Commissioner of Economic Development, and then he ran for governor unsuccessfully, and he's now the president of University of Tennessee. So those are some of the connections to Knoxville, the Knoxville business community, philanthropy through the Knoxville business community, and then how government can play a role in finding these kinds of tools that say, okay, we've piloted it, it works, we know it works. Now, how do we most effectively scale it over a broader reach of students?
Right. Yeah, it's one of the most unique things about Tennessee Achieves. It set a precedent nationally for being able to leverage nonprofits in government work. And I think one of the beauties of what Tennessee Achieves is able to do is when there's a problem, we can change immediately. It requires very little process for us to be nimble and flexible and address issues as they come about. That's something that over the last 10 years, I think really benefited Tennessee, and the process that we've had with Tennessee Promise is that we've been able to adjust on the fly and create new programs quickly and pilot them in counties where we want to try them out.
And I've talked in a previous episode with somebody about that idea of that's a lot of times how structural systemic change happens. Things begin almost at the grassroots level with a local community, local individuals piloting something almost as a demonstration plot. And then you see what about it works, what about it you need to tweak, and then you see what's scalable about it. And this is a great example of that. So back up a little bit to talking about your experience. So you went through the program, you're a first generation college student. So obviously there's the tuition assistance, the financial assistance to make higher ed more affordable, which is a huge issue right now. I think we're approaching or have exceeded $1.6 trillion in student loan debt nationally. I did my own master's research thesis, was focused on higher ed affordability and accessibility. So this is something that I've spent a lot of time thinking about, and I do fundraising in higher ed. So I'm very interested in how to make higher ed affordable for students. But talk just about the other aspects of it. As a student, what's the mentorship piece and why was that so important, and what do your mentors do?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I often say that, like, if I hadn't had Tennessee Achieves, I would have not gone to college and certainly would not have graduated from college without it. While I was in community college, I served as a student ambassador to the program, or be a peer mentor to my peers in my program. But in terms of the mentor, the value for me was that it brought an extra layer of reminder and a resource to answer questions. A mentor plays a different role for every student, particularly a first-generation college student. I think some students need encouragement because their families aren't always gung-ho about their students going to college. They're not always fired up about the idea of college. But then for students like me, whose parents wanted me to go to college, they just didn't even know how to start the process.
Yeah,
I needed a resource. I needed somebody to answer questions, point me in the right direction to get questions answered, and serve as a reminder, because I had no idea. I often say when I'm talking to students about this that if you'd asked my mom what the FAFSA was before I started college, she would have asked you what kind of car that was. Right? No clue. So had no idea what that even was. So if you don't even know what it is, how do you even know that you need to do it?
Yeah. So, and that's higher ed, right? It's its own language. There's acronyms, there's processes for, I mean, in the lead up as a high school student, how do you know how to apply not only to get accepted to an individual school, but the financial aid piece? You guys probably see different levels of effectiveness of, like, high school guidance counselors. I'm sure some are great, but I'm sure their caseload, the number of students they're trying to help, they can't do everything. So this just kind of tries to fill a gap in which students that are most likely to encounter some of these obstacles to higher ed, it's providing a resource to make sure that they get as much help as possible.
Yeah, definitely. The mentor's role is to coach them through the college access piece. So they're paired in February of the student's senior year. So they coach them through the waning months of their senior year throughout the summer, and then to get them off to a good start their college freshman year. After that, about halfway through their first semester of college, the relationship usually kind of organically ends, and our team then engages with them and continues to coach them through the process alongside the colleges. It's turned into a program that aims to ease the transition, serve as a coach during the transition from high school to college.
How many staff are, you know, part of the Tennessee Achieves?
So right now we're a staff of 27. When I started at Tennessee Achieves in June 2014, we grew from a staff of 6 to 12. The team that I work with every day is really comprised of a communications arm of the organization. So we handle all pretty much external facing work that we do from every day. Every Monday we send out an email to almost 250,000 people. We send a monthly newsletter. We create annual handbooks that go to students and parents and mentors. We create, obviously, all of our social media content, video content. All of the mentor recruitment happens through that arm. All of our community relations, all of our local advisory council management, all happens within the 4 or 5 person team that I work on.
Okay.
And outside of that, we have a data team that works on nothing but ensuring the accuracy and consistency of Tennessee Achieves and Tennessee Promise data so that all of our students are updated and accurate in our system. So we use a Salesforce CRM to manage all of our students and stakeholders. So that includes all of their community service submissions, all of their application and enrollment data.
Yeah, the website where you have a lot of pretty deep dive data, like you can go to the website and give us the website so people know where to find
you. Yeah, our website's tnachieves.org. So Tennessee abbreviated achieves.org.
And it's very intuitive once you get there. It's pretty clear. We exist to increase higher educational opportunities for Tennessee high school students by providing last dollar scholarships with mentor guidance. And then there's sort of the two links in the portal, student portal and mentor portal. And kind of once you start drilling down, you can get a county by county sort of breakdown of the number of students in that county that applied to school, that enrolled, that were retained, as well as metrics of comparing peers who weren't a part of the program, like how many filed FAFSAs, how many went to college. So I imagine a lot of that's very helpful for you all as you write grants to continue funding and expanding the program. But then also from the public policy standpoint, they can say, is this an effective, you know, investment for us from tax dollars? Like, are we getting the return on investment? Are students going to college at higher rates? Are they being successful in college? To continue to evaluate, is this program working or where are the gaps?
Yeah, we consider ourselves to be an incredibly heavy data organization. Like, we, every decision that we make is rooted in data. We don't make any decision without consulting the data first. And we always report out extensive analysis of all the programs that we do from the onset of the program in terms of how many students began the program, but we always analyze every program that we do based on student success once they're in college. So most of our programs that we've launched, particularly over the last 3 or 4 years, have been aimed at either helping low-income students be more successful in college or bridging the gap between high school senior year and college freshman year in the summer. So we've launched some new summer programs throughout the last couple of years and built on some existing programs, but we've also launched a coaching model that I'll talk about in just a second. But we always look at fall to fall retention in terms of those students. Are those students exceeding their peers' success once they're in college? Mm-hmm. So we use that fall to fall retention metric to be the one that really it's so important for us because it maintains our relevance. If our students are outpacing their peers because of our programs, we remain relevant, right? So we're always digging into that data. The challenging part is we have to pull a clearinghouse data pool every time we want to analyze our students' success. So we do that annually. It's not cheap, but it's a way for us to get accurate data on all of our students and be able to nail them down at the various institutions throughout the state, because there's not a good central reporting space right now in Tennessee for us to identify where all of our students are.
You talked about your communications team, your data team. Are there other pieces of the Tennessee Achieves sort of staff that you want to explain?
We've got 5 people on the communications team, 2 or 3 on the data team, and then the rest, 19-ish people, are in what we consider Complete. So Tennessee Achieves Complete, it was the coaching model that we launched a couple of years ago, aimed at increasing the success of low-income students in Tennessee. We did a lot of analysis on our students' success and realized that the number one factor in whether a student was successful in college or not was their EFC, their estimated family contribution based on FAFSA. And students that were falling below a certain threshold in their EFC were not performing at the same rate as all their other peers.
So that there's a strong link there between how much money a family makes and how successful they're, not how smart they are, right, not how hard they work, but how much money your parents or your family is the strongest indicator of how successful you're going to be in college or post-secondary training program.
That's right.
Which is very telling to a lot of us as we think about these kinds of issues. How do we provide better opportunities for people? This very much is tied in with economic opportunity.
Exactly.
Education, and I talked about this in a previous episode too, and working in a college of health, all three of those are kind of interlinked. So like economic development or job opportunities for people, health and education are all three linked together. You can't say like, we need to get more people in college. But in order to be successful in college, there's all these other pieces that are related.
Right. So that's the reason we created this targeted approach. We decided that we've got to just address these students specifically through programming. So we hired an additional 12 staff members that took us from about 20 or about, what are we at, 27 now. So we were about 15, 16 is where we were like at our most stable a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And we added 12 staff members, pushing us up to 27. And we identify students in the community college service areas. So we decided not to recreate the wheel that the state has already divided the state and the counties up in a way that makes sense. So we assign staff members to particular community college service areas and give them a cohort of students that fall below this particular threshold of EFC. And their goal is to reach out to their students a couple times a month and make 75 connections a week. So their goal is to continue to reach students and build a relationship. So these people on our staff, they're on the ground level, boots on the ground, talking to students every single day, building relationships, answering questions, and addressing issues. So it's really a high touch program that we've never done before. When we launched this program, it was so different from everything that we've done, because everything we've done before that has been like, how many people can we touch with one email? How big of a net can we cast?
Yeah, right.
And we realized that we were in, by doing that, there were some students getting lost in the wake, and we had to figure out how to catch those. So this was it. And the students participating in Complete are doing incredibly well. They're outpacing their peers and their low incomes. They're outpacing their peers by 13 percentage points in fall-to-fall retention rate. It means it's working, right?
That's great. What really changes is relationships, right? You said about 75 important contacts for each of these coaches. How many students are in each of their?
Shakes out to be about 250 students per coach. Some of our coaches have more students than others based on their geographic location. Yeah. Like our coaches in Memphis have more students that they reach out to. Our coaches in Nashville have a higher number of students. But then some coaches, like when we were going in person, didn't have a lot of students, but they had a huge geographic area. Yeah. So it just depends on where that coach is located.
So some of your staff, like you, are based in Knoxville, and then others of your staff are scattered around the state because they're doing this coaching, and right. they need to be there to make as effective communication as possible.
Because we have three offices. We have an office in Knoxville, an office in Nashville, an office in Memphis.
Okay.
We have a staff member in Johnson City, actually. She just moved up there a few months ago. We have a staff member that lives in Sparta, Tennessee, just south of Cookeville. Then we have a high density, I think about 10 people in Nashville and then 3 people in Memphis. So they don't necessarily live in the region in which they're working. It does require a bit of travel for some of them when we do the in-person meetings. But for the most part, it's all done remotely in terms of communication. They're reaching out to them via phone call, text message, or FaceTime and Zoom. Historically, right now, we would be trying to do in-person meetings on campuses. So we can't. So we're hosting virtual face-to-face meetings with them right now in group settings and in one-on-one settings.
So COVID obviously forced you all to pivot away from some face-to-face, though it sounds like you were already doing some of that sort of virtual coaching. It's made that become even more of a focus area. Everything's kind of gone virtual.
COVID has, you could argue, disrupted a majority of our work. We were a very much an in-person meeting organization. Twice a year, we would visit more than 300 high schools. We would meet with almost 60,000 students and their families in 2 months. And in the spring, we would meet with somewhere around 20 to 25,000 students face-to-face. Mm-hmm. When COVID hit, it was at the beginning of our spring meeting schedule. So we had already laid out all of these meetings. It's a requirement for students to attend these meetings. And we had to put a hold on all of them. So in March, we immediately shifted a gear and had to figure out a solution for this. Number one, we had to figure out a solution for this one requirement right now. How can we ensure that these students meet this requirement as dictated by state legislation? And then what does our future look like? So immediately we found a way for students to complete this meeting requirement virtually by watching a YouTube video, and there's a login process for that. So they do that through our website. So we pivoted there. I've got some data around this because we've tracked our COVID success so far. So we had 35,000 students just watch that video alone. So then we started thinking about the community service requirement. How are students going to complete community service if they can't enter their communities right now?
Everyone has to do how much community service?
8 hours of community service every semester. Yeah, it's a day of work per semester, is the way we look at it. So we had to come up with a solution for that. So we created, kind of using the same technology we used for the meeting requirement, is basically we recorded 23 virtual job shadowing webinars where we would host different mentors. Most of them were already our volunteers whose jobs are in various industries. And we had about 15 industry-specific webinars, anything from hospitality and entertainment to healthcare to education to government to attorneys, all kinds of stuff. And then we had some based on like leadership and college success and why your college professor isn't scary and what your college president wants you to know and stuff like that. So there's 23 videos. So students watch one, they're an hour long each. So a student just has to watch 8 of those and they can fulfill their community service requirement virtually. The requirements have been waived all the way through this next one, which was supposed to be December 1st. So we've got all these students that have completed community service hours, which is great. So when the next deadline comes up, they've already got those hours done. And we'll probably hang on to this virtual community service for a while. We've actually had some people from around the country asking us if they can use our job shadowing webinars. But we had 88,000 hours of community service completed virtually, and that is done by 14,659 students. Quite a few students have engaged with our online volunteer platform.
Yeah. With every disruptor, as you said, comes opportunities. Maybe ideally we would love to have people doing face-to-face community service, but right. Maybe we've stumbled onto another resource that's going to continue to be beneficial that meets another need of some of our students in terms of that, you know, job shadowing, thinking about different career paths they wouldn't have been exposed to otherwise. I'm sure there's lots of nonprofits out there that'll say, but don't waive like the in-person volunteering.
That's something that's deeply rooted in our organization. This has created an incredible opportunity for your student that lives in Johnson County or your student that lives in Hancock County. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of economic opportunity there. Right. And you don't have a ton of opportunities to be exposed to some of these industries. Like you just simply can't just drive down the road and visit some of these medical industries or, you know, there's a lot out there in engineering, various types of industries that they just don't have access to locally. This brings it to their computer or their phone right in front of them. They can learn a lot about that particular industry right there and decide if this is something that they'd like to pursue after college.
Yeah, and that's the post-COVID world. I mean, we're all realizing we're identifying the gaps and then we're, you know, figuring out solutions to those. You know, in rural areas like ours, there's been a lot of conversation about how important telehealth has been right. And sort of bridging that gap for healthcare. But then broadband is a huge, you know, a huge thing that if it's in place, it enables these kinds of programs to be more accessible for people in rural communities that helps Absolutely. Them in terms of education and economic development, health, you know, on all those fronts. Maybe that's, you know, one of the silver linings of the pandemic is we were forced to innovate and we identify some new solutions that hopefully help us do things a little better in the future.
Definitely. And our mentor program is the best example of that we have. We've been asked for 6 years to come up with an online mentoring platform. We get asked every year, do you have your mentor platform yet? Do you have your mentor portal yet? Can we log on and see our students yet? And we've had a patchwork piece for that the last couple of years that we were able to build out through a form program that we use called Form Assembly, but it wasn't an official mentoring platform that was designed by people smarter than us. And we were able to invest this year in a new program called Tennessee Achieves Connect, which is essentially LinkedIn for Tennessee Achieves mentoring. It looks a lot like LinkedIn. You can actually link your LinkedIn profile to it. But every student and every mentor in our program will now have a profile that they populate on their own within Tennessee Achieves Connect. And the mentor-mentee relationship is established in there. So now you can instant message with your mentor on Tennessee Achieves Connect. You can do like we're doing right now on mm-hmm. a Zoom. You mm-hmm. can instant message within Connect. You can make a phone call. You can track goals. You can set goals and track them in real time there. You can log community service. You can access any resources that we post. You can engage in discussion with other Tennessee Achieves stakeholders. It's just something that we've always wanted. We just didn't have the resources to do. And we were able to partner with Bank of America, who has generously paid for the first couple of years of this for us to be able to host it and get it off the ground. So cool. It's something that's going to be, I think, if we get participation up and it's used widespread across the state, a standard, I think, nationally for online mentoring, if we can get this right.
Yeah, that's cool. So tell us about the big scope of impact. How many students are touched by Tennessee Achieves? How many students have gone through this program, or maybe how many are in it now?
Since inception, we've worked with over 440,000 students across the state. This past August, we enrolled our 100,000th student in college. So we had a week-long celebration a couple of weeks ago where we had 14 different panel discussions on Zoom, and we hosted a lot of our different stakeholders on there and had a discussion about Tennessee Achieves and its impact. So we had panels of college presidents, panels of TCAP presidents, panels of high school counselors, high school principals, directors of schools, students, mentors, board members. We had all kinds of stuff to discuss all the various impacts of Tennessee Achieves and what it's meant for the first 100,000 students that we enrolled in college. We've worked with over 40,000 mentors since the program launched, and hopefully adding 9,000 more of those this year. We've seen $97 million of Tennessee Promise funding distributed to students across the state. Our students outpace their peers in fall-to-fall retention by 10 percentage points overall across the board. They graduate 21 percentage points higher rate than their peers. So both retaining and graduating at a higher rate.
That's incredible.
The students that participate in our summer programs have a 17 percentage point increase in their fall-to-fall retention rate. So for students versus students that aren't participating in our summer programs. We've already talked about complete, but again, those students outpace their peers by 13 percentage points in fall-to-fall retention. So what that also says is connectivity and accountability means everything in this process. Mm. And the last stat that we always talk about is that our students have completed 2.96 million hours of community service since 2009, most of which have been done in the state of Tennessee.
So you talked about a little bit about this being a model. Are there specific other states that have patterned, basically, are they just kind of copying and stealing what Tennessee Promise is or what Tennessee Achieves does? And they're just like, we need to do something like this in state X or Y.
That's a great question. We have advised many states on launching Promise programs. Last summer, we hosted, I was part of a small team that was welcoming guests to Knoxville who were coming and staying the night and studying our program for multiple days, and we would provide basically a consultation on how to launch a Promise program. We had a group from Nevada that came and spent a significant amount of time with us, and they just lots of this internal discussions about organizing and planning and implementation. Dallas County came and visited, Harris County came and visited, those are out of Texas. I think Texas's strategy is to do it more regional, as opposed to try to do a statewide program. I think geography dictates that a little bit across the country. So this is something that's gaining steam. I know that when the Obama administration was in office, we had a lot of discussions about a free college movement that was launched under then Vice President Biden's wife, Jill Biden, who is very passionate about this. And something that hopefully it's continued to be carried out because I think it's something that can be really impactful nationally. And we certainly are available to states to answer those questions and provide as much insight as we possibly can in terms of scaling this in different states and communities. One other really, really successful, they call them free college programs. I don't necessarily love that term, but free college program is the Kalamazoo Promise, which is in Kalamazoo, Michigan, which is sort of the original of all of these. It's something that we looked at when we launched Knox Achieves back in 2008. It's been around since before that. I think the one unique thing about Tennessee that we got right is number one, it's administered by a nonprofit. So it's not, doesn't require legislative action every time you want to change something. But we also had a Republican governor who carried out a free college program. So it had tons of bipartisan support and was something that was pretty much accepted by everybody in the state and had a huge splash. So it had tons of support from the beginning. And we've just, and also we had almost 6 years of data to say this works and this doesn't. And we weren't just trying things for no reason. We had data behind everything that we were doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Which again, like not everything has to be partisan, and it like there are different ways to help people get access to education that everyone can agree on that. That's not a Republican or Democrat or independent thing. You know, how you do it may be different. And I could see how you're saying like, yeah, we don't like the language of calling it a free this or a free that, because then it's perceived to be a handout as opposed to an investment in people's training. You know, so part of it is the language you use does matter and the way that you characterize it. But I think the stats that you pointed out about how these are investments in people's lives and in a lot of ways by extension, investments in their communities, that it's job training investment and it's, you know, life training investment. And so you reap the returns on that investment when people are taxpaying citizens and get good jobs and achieve well. And then the biggest indicator, like you said, if those people have better incomes, you're not having another generation of of their kids that are going to do poorly in school because they don't have great access to good job, good well-paying jobs.
Absolutely. I mean, Tennessee Promise is an arm of an overarching umbrella program that's called the Drive to 55. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Drive to 55. I'm sure you are. It's the state's goal of achieving a 55% college achievement rate by 2025. We're on our way, actually. We're doing well to get there. But the idea is that if Tennessee can get to 55%, we will be ahead of our peers nationally, and that makes us more attractive to industry, but it also means more people will have good jobs in communities in Tennessee that don't currently have them. That's all great. I think it's something that we should definitely think about, particularly when we're making decisions and changes and innovating in our work. But when you look at you drill it all the way down to the individual student, the thing that excites me the most is that one student going to college breaks a family cycle. Yeah. And if you can just do that over and over and over again, eventually communities are more educated and industries are going to be more inclined to open up shop when you've got more people in the community that have college credentials. And when I say a college credential, it's not a four-year bachelor's degree. That's anything from a 12-month program at TCAT to a 12-year medical degree. Anything post-high school credential matters.
Sure.
I'm often considered a TCAT evangelist across the state as I go out and talk, because I think it's overlooked. And when I talk to particularly male students who they just say they don't like school, they don't want to go to college because they think it's just more of the same, I try to get them to go visit a TCAT, because just one visit is all it takes. If I can get one student on the campus of a TCAT, the vision is there.
Yeah.
So I try to tell, I'll try to always make a point that it's not just 4 year, it's not just even community college, it's everything. And that includes technical training in Tennessee, which I would argue we do as good as anybody in the country.
Yeah, some great community colleges and technical programs. And yeah, the traditional bachelor's program is not going to be the right program for everybody. And that's not the career path that everyone wants. So if that's what we mean by college, then yeah, we're kind of shoving everyone through a funnel that it isn't the right fit. But if we think about, again, post-secondary training more broadly, then, you know, it's a little different. It's a little different paradigm. And yeah, I love how much all this connects back to regional and local communities in terms of the workforce development, recruiting employers. So I think it's been a very, you know, intentional and thoughtful design by folks in the state of Tennessee. And it's great to see that we're making progress on that drive to 55, you know, the large macro goal, how this particular program is one piece of that. So thanks for sharing all this with us, and thanks for your service. I mean, obviously you do what you do and you're a part of this, you know, from a career standpoint, in part because you benefited from the program. And so you can kind of easily talk about the benefits because you're a poster child. Look, I'm the result of how this program works, but just more generally, as you think about just volunteerism or philanthropy, or just kind of why you do what you do from an individual standpoint, are there values or faith convictions or any of that kind of stuff that for you are the why of why you do what you do?
Definitely. I mean, my entire career so far has been based in the idea that if I can help families and students better understand the value of college, I'm doing my part in closing an equity gap that's continuing to go the wrong way in our country. I feel very strongly that education is not the only answer, but an answer to closing an equity gap. And I feel strongly that my skill set is one that is designed to communicate with people and empathize with people and help bring people along. And I have spent the last 7 years, I use that term again, evangelizing in a way about the value of college and why it's important, from urban high schools to incredibly rural high schools to metropolitan high schools to use the most politicized term this year, suburban high schools. I've been to all of them. And I've talked to so many students and families who have high confidence in college and low confidence in college. And that's what drives me, is that I truly believe that college is a it's a cycle breaker for families. If you can just get them to believe and invest. I tell this story anytime I possibly can, because I think it shows what Tennessee Achieves is doing, but I think it shows what higher ed can do in a community. And it's this, I visited, and some of your listeners may live there. It's in Cock County, Tennessee, Newport, Tennessee. I think some you probably know where that is, but not everyone does. It's in East Tennessee. It's a rural county in East Tennessee. In Cock County, it's always kind of been a challenge to get students to go to college. Their college going rate's been towards the bottom of the state. And when I first visited there in 2014, I showed up for their team meeting, which is the meeting with all of the students, and most of the time, all of the families, all of the volunteers jammed in a cafeteria. I showed up to their high school for the first meeting in 2014, and there was about 20% of the students showed up. And none of the families were there. And the question was, why are you here?
Yeah.
Right. Last year, when I showed up at Cock County High School for their team meeting, I had to open a door to get some air in the cafeteria because it was so hot, because there were so many people jammed in this cafeteria to hear about Tennessee Achieves. I mean, there was 100% attendance. Every aunt, uncle, mom, dad, sister, brother, dog, baby, everybody that's ever been in that family that wants to see this kid succeed was at this meeting. It's been a slow progression of more and more excitement about the idea of going to college. And now the question when I'm there, it's not why are you here? It's where am I going?
Yeah.
That's a powerful change.
Yeah, absolutely.
When a community no longer thinks about why college is important, and it's where are my students going to college? Where am I going to go to college? Not why am I going to college, right? And that's been the mindset shift, and I've seen it in person. And I've been to Cock County High School every year for 7 years, twice a year at least. And it's been a slowly but surely we've got there. And it's like, that's the power of what a community investing in post-secondary attainment can do. And I would argue that their community has invested. They're not the only county. I have those stories all across the state where a county mayor and a chamber of commerce and a local volunteer and somebody from industry and a high school principal all come together and say, hey, we're going to take this seriously.
Yeah.
We're going to carry this to the finish line. Yeah. And when you have all those people with the same message, a nice, clean, clear message that our high school seniors are going to earn a post-secondary credential. We're going to figure it out. You see those sorts of things happen.
Sure.
And it can be in rural, it can be in urban, it can be in suburban. It doesn't matter. But when you get all of those players on the same playing field, I think it breeds, it's infectious for people in the community, and they want to know what's going on. I think you'll see post-secondary institutions looking to hopefully build training facilities in Cock County, because right now there's not one.
And that word of mouth, like once it works for one family or one student or a cohort of students, and hey, these folks help me get access to better training, which helped me get a job. I mean, that's all the marketing you need. People will tell the story if it's good news, and if it's good news for them, it's because it works. You figured out a system that works.
Yeah.
It's simple. It helps people, you know, be successful. And again, not that the system is perfect. I'm sure you guys are continuing to learn and tweak, and you'll continue to do that. And I know you continue to have needs. So maybe as we wrap up, tell us about, I think you said you still need 9,000 mentors. That seems like a pretty heavy lift. And that was part of the reason why I wanted to invite you on, was to invite folks, if they're out there and are looking for a way, even in a COVID world where it's not, you know, it's not easy maybe to figure out how to give back and help somebody else in need. This is a very practical way where a single mom from home, or a, you know, stay at home mom, or a young professional all the way up to a business CEO, anyone could volunteer to become a mentor of a student through this program. So talk about your need and how people can help in that way.
Yeah, so we need 2,600 statewide left remaining. We recruit 9,000 statewide annually, and today we need about 2,600 more to reach our goal. Our deadline is December 4th, so we're less than a month to the deadline. And your county, if you're listening, we need you. It doesn't matter what county you live in Tennessee. The only one in Northeast Tennessee that we don't have mentors in is Unicoi, because the Ayres Foundation administers Tennessee Promise in Unicoi County, and we do not. So we used to. So every other county in East Tennessee other than Unicoi County, we need you. If you live in Unicoi County, we can use you in Carter. So just come on over. So we need people in every county in the area. The beautiful thing about mentoring with Tennessee Achieves in 2021 is it's 100% virtual, where historically it's been a lot of in-person meeting. Not so this year. It's all virtual via Tennessee Achieves Connect that we talked about. So all of that's done on the platform. The students and mentors will never meet face-to-face. I know that's a little challenging for some folks, but we're going to do everything we can to facilitate relationships for students and mentors in this COVID virtual world that we're in, at least for the next year. So join us. We need you. You can apply at tnachieves.org. If you just Google TN Achieves Mentors, it'll pop up there. You can visit our social media accounts. It's always out there every day getting posted out there. So TN Achieves on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We're always out there. LinkedIn. The links are available on all of those websites. Or you can just shoot me an email. It's ben@tnachieves.org, and I can get you all of the information that you need.
Yeah, and he would love to hear. He would love to see 2,600 emails in his inbox just saying, I'm signing up. I want to be a part. What are people committing to? Some people might say, okay, like, sure, I would like to help, but I also don't want to kind of like overdo it. Or if I sign up, am I going to be assigned to one student or 10? Or
great question.
Do I get to choose? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, so the logistics of mentoring, you're going to volunteer about an hour a month is what it shakes out to. When we survey our mentors, they say they spend about an hour a month communicating with their students. You're assigned 5 to 10 students from the high school of your choice. The reason for the 5 to 10 is there is some natural attrition in our program. So typically in an annual year, a normal year, 100% of seniors in the state apply for Tennessee Promise, and not 100% of them go to a community or technical college and use Tennessee Promise. And we understand that. So there is some attrition. So if you have 5 students that you're assigned to, typically you'll work with 1 to 3 active students. If you actually want to work with 5 students, we say register to work with 10. That way you'll actually get 5 to 7 active students that will communicate with you. So yeah, it's less than an hour a month. It's something that we designed for the busiest person that we know to mentor, and that's Randy Boyd. So if Randy Boyd can mentor, you can mentor. That's what I always say. He's the busiest human on the face of the earth, and he finds a way to mentor. He's mentored 12 years in a row. So if he can do it, anybody can.
Yeah. Well, he's like the Energizer Bunny in terms of his energy level. Like when he was running for governor, he like ran across the state of
Tennessee. Unreal.
He was here in my building I'm sitting in right now, visiting with us and talking some about, he's obviously a very giving person, both philanthropically, but then also, yeah, taking the time to mentor as a college president of the University of Tennessee. That says a lot that he takes time to actually build relationships with high school seniors and help them access higher ed. So that's awesome. Well, anything else you want to share with us in closing as we wrap up?
I always like to plug that the Tennessee Promise deadline is still open. So it was November 2nd, and it got pushed to December 1st. So the deadline now for the class of 2021. So if you have any parents that are listening here, siblings, grandparents that have a high school senior, make sure they have that application in by December 1st. We won't be able to take it after that. So get that application in there. And all students, Tennessee Promise students across the state, have to file FAFSA by February 1st. So make sure they get that done too. Always got to plug our deadlines.
Yeah, good. Now you did mention that you are, like, it is a nonprofit. So if somebody wants to like make a donation to your organization, how do they go about doing that?
Just get in touch with me and I can get you to the right people. We certainly are appreciative of anything anyone wants to give. We've been working with some corporate partners to really look at more project specific donations. That's really been our goal. Some of our summer programming, looking at summer bridge programs statewide and getting some sponsors for those types of things. If anybody's interested in that, we would certainly appreciate anything we could get. Definitely. Just get in touch with me though, ben@tnachieves.org, and I can get you directed to the right folks.
All right. And the website one more time is?
Yeah. Website tnachieves.org. Tennessee abbreviated tnachieves.org. Always Google us. If you get it close on Google, you'll find us.
Well, hey, I appreciate your time and thanks so much for all the work you're doing. It was great to kind of hear more. I learned some things. I thought I knew a lot about the program, but I learned some things and appreciate all the good work you all are doing, and excited to see how this continues to help Tennessee and our students and our communities thrive in the future.
Me too. I appreciate the opportunity to share a little bit about what we're doing, and look forward to engaging with some of your listeners in the years to come.
Well, thanks again to Ben Sterling from TN Achieves for being my guest and for sharing with us about the many great things that they do in their organization, the thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of students, and the thousands of mentors that they work with across the state of Tennessee as they help increase access to affordable post-secondary training for students. Please check out the show notes where you can find a link to the TN Achieves website. At that website, you can sign up to become a mentor or to learn more about the great work of this organization. I encourage you, as I always do, to please check out the website for my friend Daniel Cooper, whose music you've heard throughout the episode. And please do consider joining me. This is going to be my first year as a mentor for TN Achieves. I'm really excited about it. And I encourage you to also become a TN Achieves mentor this year. A great way to give and make a difference and do some volunteering to give back. Until next time, unleash your own generosity. Brother.